6.5%, was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round-by-round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast brought to you by Anna and Chris. I'm Chris, she's Anna. Happens to be in Zero Mile House or something like that right now. Joining me virtually as always with her mom on the side. Hi, Anna's mom.
Yeah, this time when we say hi, Anna's mom, she is literally looking at me across the room. So she's waving back to me, which is lovely. Instead of thousands of miles away, she is with me here at Zero Mile House in Lillooet.
Yeah, I mean, really, if she's waving at you right now, she's quite literally waving at our listeners. So Anna's mom is waving to all of you.
Yeah, this is like a very behind-the-scenes look of recording the podcast. So if listeners want that, you just have to pay your yearly subscription and also come on vacation with me.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, is it behind-the-scenes look when you can't see?
Yeah, I guess it's behind-the-scenes hearing.
Yeah.
And she can only
behind
hear
the scenes
half
look
it,
that you can hear.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, yeah, it's fun.
But you know what else is fun, Anna? The Vancouver Canucks right now, because they're rewarding me for my optimism and punishing you for your pessimism.
I know. Couldn't be happier to be wrong. 3 wins out of 3. We love it.
All I was thinking about yesterday was Vancouver Canucks better not let me down. They've done it so far. Better not let me down. Boy, they didn't let me down at all. Got a little interesting against Calgary, just a little bit, but ultimately the Vancouver Canucks did the job and got me the 3 dubs. So I am, as a podcaster, officially retiring on the top. Yeah. I got 1 week right.
Just retiring before the Canucks even make the playoffs that we've waited so long.
That's right.
For, yeah.
Yeah, I got my 3 dubs. I mean, I've been recording for what? I always think about this. Like, is it 11 years, I think, now? 11 years?
Right,
something
yeah.
Like,
anyhow, I think you were 2003 when you guys started, right? Oh, it's 2003,
2013.
I can do maths, I promise.
Hey, as I've always said, CHB can't count to 3. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about the week that was, the week that will be, the fact that the Vancouver Canucks have maybe turned things around. The GMs all got together, hung out, talked about some stuff, and apparently science is optional at these meetings, so we'll probably get into that too. And whatever else we can, you know, wind up over the course of an hour-long show. But speaking of winding things up, let's rewind. If you listened to the show last week, and I know all 7 of you did. I mean, I don't know. There could be 7,000 for all I know. The statistics that we get about our listens are completely wild. You may have heard me suggest that the Vancouver Canucks should get 3 wins. And I was like, I don't feel I should be saying this, but there's just 3 teams that you beat. And if you're a good team, that's what you go and get done. And the Vancouver Canucks went and got it done. Maybe not the most convincing approach to do it, but hey, 3 wins is 3 wins, no matter how you look at it. So let's start off with the fact that the Vancouver Canucks got to take on the Buffalo Slugs, though they weren't wearing their Buffalo Slug uniform, so I probably shouldn't call them that, and did what they do best. They get the first goal of the game. In fact, they get the first goal of the game and do so pretty darn, not pretty darn early, 4 minutes, but still early. Which I think there was a statistic shared this weekend. The Vancouver Canucks currently like lead the league in first goal scored.
Yeah.
But then taking it a step further, the timing of their first goal is like nutso.
It's kind of wild, actually. Like, we've complained a lot over the years about Canucks slow starts. Now we're complaining that they're scoring too early, but.
Yeah. But Connor Garland, you know, gets that goal in the first period. The Canucks power play has figured things out. So, up to nothing going into the third. Buffalo should probably be rolling over. But the Vancouver Canucks, always being the consummate hosts, allow the Sabres to sort of get a sniff. With Darlene getting a goal midway through the third period. And at that point, it kind of seemed like the Vancouver Canucks might be very accommodating in giving Buffalo a chance to tie it up. But thankfully, they didn't allow the second goal to happen until the Vancouver Canucks got a third.
Yeah, and I will say that, like, looking at the score sheet, it seems a bit harsh on the Canucks. Like, Canucks dominated most of that game. Buffalo got some consolation goals, but saying that, like we always say, like, you know, you don't get points for dominating your team, you get points for wins, so you don't want to get too close to that edge there.
And that has hurt the Canucks in previous weeks, right? We've said, hey, the Vancouver Canucks had a 3-goal lead. Apparently, they didn't realize there were two more periods to go. Like, this has happened. So, when Darlene gets that goal, I'm not feeling as, you know, fired up and thinking it's going to be the greatest game. Petey gets the empty netter. Okay, whew, good. Oh, look, you let Darlene get a second one with, like, five seconds left. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Yeah, exactly. And there was such just, like, big moments in that game, like the Quinn Hughes hit where... which saw Quinn Hughes, like, produce his second smile ever.
Hughes, your daddy.
Yeah.
Or was that the Montreal game?
No, that was Buffalo. I was there.
Was it the Buffalo? Okay. So, the Hughes, your daddy.
Yeah. The Lashheaders loved that one for sure.
Is Quinn Hughes old enough to be...
Yeah, I never really joined in with that chant because that was my feeling that he is just a baby. Even when he was our captain, he's just a baby. But that moment was like a daddy moment if there ever was one. So, yeah. He, may have deleted. Who was hit against? I've forgotten. But
I don't
remember.
I just
because he's been
chat.
Deleted. So that's why we don't remember who it was. But yeah, that was a fun moment for sure. And yeah, we also must... not be remiss, we must thank our new assistant coach, Daniel Wagner, who has told Pettersson to move his feet. And Pettersson said, okay.
So that was Wagner that...
Yeah, that was Wags in the press conference. He said, you need a reminder to move your feet sometime.
I was going to use Wags, but depending on the context, there's different Wags.
Who are the other Wags?
Oh, no, it's Pags, not Wags. Yeah. But then there's Wags.
Yeah. And then there's Wags. But yeah, that was... I like that JPAT was very diplomatic in his tweet that said, a reporter told Pettersson, does he need a reminder to move his feet sometimes? And Pettersson said, yeah, I think I just got one. But, you know, Wags owned it, and of course he did. Like, clearly it worked.
So they get the first dub. Montreal rolls into town. Montreal is having a rough go right now. They've had a rough go much of the season. And the Vancouver Canucks, again, consummate host, decided that if you're having a rough go, why don't we embrace the rough go-ness? Like, it wasn't the most inspiring hockey game. I mean, I gave credit. The Vancouver Canucks did shoot the puck in the first period. And then decided that they didn't necessarily need to shoot the puck any longer. But thankfully, Montreal really wasn't all that interested in shooting the puck themselves. Nikita Zadorov decided that he needed to get himself on the score sheet a few times. Buddy just needed to get into a fight to get himself the Gordie Howe hat trick. Like, and the way Zadorov plays, it's not a stretch to consider that possibility doesn't exist.
Yeah, doesn't he already have a... Gordie Howe hat trick this season? Is that right?
Oh, he might.
Or was that?
Yeah,
Or at least he's been on the cusp before. Like, he is that kind of player. Like, he's in the action. He's definitely in the mix a lot of the time. And I did tweet...
go ahead.
I was going to say, I did tweet during the game that I wonder if it's the biggest height discrepancy between consecutive goal scorers for the same team. I don't know how you would look into that, but Zadorov followed by Connor Garland, like...
Well, okay, it was Zadorov Garland.
Yeah.
So, I mean, two Zadorovs is going to be bigger than one Garland.
Even bigger height discrepancy.
Two Garlands might not be bigger than one Zadorov.
Maybe but not.
The first goal that Zadorov got, that wrist shot, was just beautiful.
Actually,
I've never really looked at him as being a goal scorer.
Nope. Yeah. And certainly not that kind of goal scorer.
Yeah, if he could produce that shot more frequently and happen to stick around Vancouver, because he is a UFA at the end of the season, which...
Like most Canucks defensemen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a guy I'd like them to re-sign. I mean, there are others I wouldn't mind them keeping around.
Yeah, but it does like sort of complicate the sort of how much money do you need to re-sign Roenick? And then it's like, well.
Yeah, true.
Add Zadorov into the mix and it's not cheap.
No. But the Vancouver Canucks get themselves, three straight goals before Yaroslavkowski goes and ruins the shutout late in late in the second period. But it wasn't, again, it wasn't the type of game where you thought the Habs were at any point going to be in it. They were taking penalties that the Vancouver Canucks would normally take. They lacked discipline. Outside of the Connor Garland double minor, thankfully was negated somewhat by the Arbor Chekash
Wi-Fi
penalty. There wasn't ever a moment of worry.
There wasn't really much fight coming from Montreal, that's for sure.
No, I mean, it feels to me like Montreal is at the stage where they're simply going through the motions to get themselves to an off season, at which point they can figure out where they go from here. I mean, they're not in Anaheim Ducks territory, but they're sort of trending in that direction. Mm-hmm. So that sets up the game this past weekend against the Calgary Flames. As an aside, Vancouver downtown, very busy. On Saturday, I happened to go to the Whitecaps match. Whitecaps did not win, but just like the Canucks, they ensured that they got the first goal.
It's funny. Like, obviously, some game was, you can't help it, but you kind of think, aren't they supposed to avoid having at least weekend games the same night? I thought that was a thing.
Well, Major League Soccer, with their deal... or a broadcast deal with Apple, has a much more restrictive schedule. And so I think like the vast majority of all matches exist either on a Wednesday night or a Saturday night.
Yeah.
And then as far as the time frame is concerned, typically West Coast 7:30, East Coast 5:30. Interestingly enough, this Whitecaps match was an early match. It was actually scheduled to have a 4:30 kickoff. And it wasn't as if it was like New York City or someone that was in town. That was Real Salt Lake, which
that's actually time, I guess.
Not a whole. Yeah. I wonder if that's the parallel where it's like, okay, let's massage the schedule to allow for there not to be too significant of a conflict between the two games. And there were a lot of Canucks jerseys in BC Place. Very few Flames jerseys in BC Place. When we left the match and we were walking back to the car, lots of Flames jerseys arriving to the hockey game or the various establishments around the rink.
There you go. Yeah, because I remember just the chaos of the Christine Sinclair game. Happening during the Canucks game was just like, it was chaotic downtown. Like, it did not go well.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, there's other things happening in downtown Vancouver as well. I think the auto show is in town at the convention center, what have you. It doesn't matter to me. It's a bunch of vehicles I could never afford to own. So,
yeah.
But anyway, let's talk about the game that I think most people had tuned in to hear us discuss. I missed the first goal, Anna. And it's not because I missed the first goal because I couldn't turn on the TV. I was kept making my way home from the Whitecaps match, but I had brought the car so I could hop in. In the amount of time it took for me to get through, because I parked at the Vancouver Public Library and there's a period of space where there's no AM reception.
Okay.
The goal had scored in that like brief amount of time. Like the puck had just dropped, get the static, and then I come out and the game is on. I don't think anything of it. I get home just as sort of the intermission is happening and they're like, oh, it's 1-0 for Vancouver. And I'm
when?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking in my mind, like, how did I miss this goal? Well, yeah, it was the brief like 30 seconds to a minute that it took for me to get the AM reception. And Höglander had scored already. 48 seconds into the game. Nice tip in, beauty goal, having seen the replay. But it definitely sort of, I don't want to say set the tone, but opened up the game some. Not to suggest that Calgary was coming in to maybe clamp things down, but it definitely had a playoff hockey feel to it. The referees weren't really intending to call much of anything. Granted, a couple of the penalties that they ended up calling later in the game, both ways were like, okay. But
yeah. I mean, we can talk about that when we get to it, but there's a few interesting decisions there. But for real, like, it was a fast-moving game. It did feel like Canucks were on top for a lot of it, but Calgary wasn't giving an inch in terms of actually letting them get through. So it did feel like one of those games where Canucks are going to rue the day they don't capitalize on their dominance. And it did feel a little like that in the third period for sure. Yeah. But like that second goal from Nils Höglander, that was just beautiful.
Yeah, and I think it's remiss that we don't mention that the line of Höglander, Pettersson, and Garland seems to have just a tiny bit of chemistry.
Yeah, I'm thinking that they like playing together. Maybe that's just me.
I think it's just you. It's totally you. I mean, even though you've given it a name, the Pogue line, which
I've taken that.
Connor is disappointed.
I've taken that from somewhere, so I can't claim credit.
Really? You're not claiming credit, but you don't know who to credit.
Okay, no. I'm checking here. I think it is Becca at the Cheap Becca on Twitter, and I like it. Hmm. It's like Pettersson. Garland gets the G, which is kind of already there from Höglander, but like...
Well, actually, on this note, so Garland had previously stated that the third line should not get a name.
So maybe he doesn't get his, like, he doesn't get a part of the name.
So, but that's the thing is that this isn't the third line, this is the second line. Does the second line get a name or is it just the top line? But if it's the top line... the top line in, like, we don't have, if it's not the Lotto line, there isn't a name.
Yeah. And, like, let's face it, we do love giving things names, but if we're not giving it a name, we still at least need to recognize that this is a fun line to watch, and we don't, like, we were praying for Dakota Joshua to come back so we could reunite that third line. I don't think we see that.
Glue guy.
And I am very happy for it. See him come back, but yeah, maybe he sticks with his buddy Teddy, but you know, Garland found new friends.
The Canucks, though, as the second period progressed, became more and more, not so much dominant in their play, but confident in their play. I am actually upset that they allowed the Flames to get that sort of late opportunity in the second when Erasmus Anderson scored to give Calgary some life that they were starting to sort of lose.
Yeah, it felt like some giving them an unearned door back into the game.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's 2-1 going into the intermission. The Flames you know, don't want to lose to Vancouver. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's a Calgary-Vancouver rivalry and more than like a Calgary-Edmonton rivalry would be. But that goal, with no fault to Casey DeSmith, who had made the initial save and then proceeded to be screened on the subsequent shot, it just simply allowed Calgary to get something that they probably didn't deserve at this point. They might have deserved it in the first period, maybe not so much in the second. And when the third period rolled around, not so much defense optional, but definitely a lot more freewheeling than I would have liked.
Yeah.
That said, the JT Miller penalty, you think that was a trip?
Yeah.
I mean, he had a stick at the skates and he let it go.
Yeah, so we're talking about the JT Miller penalty that he took rather than the one he earned.
Well, the one he got called against Kadri, yes, as opposed penalty. To the Kylington over him.
Was it a penalty shot? No, I don't think.
Well, the penalty shot would have been the Podkolzin slash on Huberto.
Right, exactly.
Huberto was like, that's not a penalty shot. And I have to kind of agree with Huberto there. He's on a pretty clean break. Now, I'm not going to claim to know what the criteria is to meet penalty shot. Because he did get a quality shot off still.
Yeah.
So does that mean that it's not a penalty shot and it's a penalty? Like in soccer, for instance, like Dogso, there are criteria that a denial of an obvious goal scoring opportunity has to reach to become an ejection and off you go. And so if one of these criteria is not met, then it's likely going to be a caution.
Right.
Still could be a foul, still could be a penalty kick, what have you. So,
like, I somewhat get it.
I'm just wondering if hockey has something like that.
Huberto's perspective, but it's not as egregious as the later one.
No. Now, the Kadri draw of his penalty, like the broadcast, I like how they were talking about how, Kadri, he's known to do this and he takes advantage. And then they show the replay and I'm like, oh, JT, you've put your stick in a place that an experienced player like Nazem Kadri knows he's going to get the call from.
Sure.
Was it a trip? I actually don't necessarily think it was, but you're a referee standing some distance away.
Yeah, also I feel like
you're gonna make that call.
JT's like giving him the option. Right? He's giving Cardi the option and I honestly hate it. Just quick sidebar, Cardi's got a rough deal, I think, from many organizations and definitely from hockey media. And it kind of sucks that players of color get those reputations so much more easily than white players of being trouble in some way or another. By the way, Kadri is a bit annoying. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying he's my favorite player, but
but he's the type of annoying player that I think you would like to have on 100%. Your team.
Yeah. He's an Alex Burrows type. He gets under player skins very easily. So,
Connor Garland was on After Hours, and a question had come in. What are his thoughts on being the player voted most wanted, or
the player
that I most want to fight?
Or punch in the face
by NHL players, or punch in the face, or something like that. Yeah, and Connor is like, well, I could totally see him like the smallest guy in the game, and then Scott Oak sort of prodded. Well, in fairness. Well, that may be true. That's not why they want to bite you.
But there probably is something in the sort of mentality that it's annoying that he's good and he's feisty as a small player. Yeah.
Yeah. But we love that he's in a Vancouver Canucks jersey. Now, let's talk about the JT Miller or the Kylington penalty on JT. So JT comes in with a pretty voracious forecheck. He scares Kylington out of his skates. It was weird because the puck is up and Kylington has the means to go and probably get the puck and control it. But maybe Miller came up and said, boo, and it startled him or something like that. So he screws this up. Miller turnstiles him and is clear to the net and Kylington just trips him. Like, we're talking full-on trips. JT, the puck goes to the corner. JT slides into Markstrom. Markstrom had, like, the blocker out and the stick out. Like, it kind of looked like Markstrom was going to take a free shot at the player who's, you know, sliding on his butt and the ice into him.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's Shillington. That's... It's weirdly how you pronounce
Shillington.
How you pronounce that?
Okay, whatever. It's Oliver.
Yeah, Oliver's weird Swedish name.
Oliver K.
Yeah, he very clearly got embarrassed by JT, and kind of like retaliated in that way. And I do love Markstrom's just like, I think he just how he panics and he's just like, well, I got to stop the puck or the player or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me that's a penalty shot, for sure.
That's a penalty shot. And I honestly believe the only reason it isn't called a penalty shot in the game is, one, when the actual call took place, it's late and referees don't want to influence it. But two, that they hadn't given the penalty shot earlier.
Yeah, totally.
And therefore,
even
can't reconcile the difference. Didn't really matter, though, because it only took, what, like 8 seconds, yeah, if that, for JT to then go and capitalize on the subsequent power play, putting the Vancouver Canucks up by 2 late in the game. The problem is that the score sheet does somewhat of a disservice. When Lindholm goes and gets the empty net goal, it's 4-1. You think things are done. They certainly are until Joel Hanley scores with 19 seconds left and Calgary celebrates like they won the cup. Which is, it was weird to see that level of celebration at that point in the game. I mean, I'm being facetious. They didn't celebrate like they had won the cup. But it was definitely not a subdued celebration you would get from a team who just scored a late goal in a game that they've lost. Like the,
do you think that's a reaction to goal a that we Lindholm saw? Empty netter just before?
Maybe. Who knows? But like you look at what happened when Montreal gets their late goal and it's just like, okay, nice goal, tap, tap, tap. This goal with 19 seconds left in the game was like, yeah, oh, cool, you're going to lose 4-2.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's a bit weird, but I also know that Arsenal get, you know, hounded by the celebration police, so I'm not going to maybe go hard in Calgary, even though, you know, this is a losing effort. It's quite different, but yeah, I don't know if it was the Lindholm thing or the, you know, hard done by thing. Maybe they just like scoring against Vancouver, but yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, Vancouver gets themselves 6 points out of the course 3 games. Chris knows what he's talking about. Anna knows squat for at least 1 week.
Yeah.
Because I think you would have given them 5 points, had you not? I think you had given them an OTL against Calgary.
I think so.
Yeah,
I am happy to take the loss on this one. Like, yeah. Seeing Canucks get more resilient when we've seen them break in the past couple weeks and falter, and they've clearly, you know, faltered within games this week. But yeah, they still held out for 3 wins, so I think that's it's much. Much closer to what we want to see going into the postseason in a month's time. Yeah.
And as we record, the Vancouver Canucks are currently sitting top of the league, tied with the New York Rangers at 98 points. When we look at the percentage, it is even. And as well, the games are completely identical, 71 games played. The thing to also point out, though, is that the Vancouver Canucks have 2 more games, or a, was it 2 games in hand on... Oh, no, it's only 1 game in hand. So the games are starting to even out. So forget what I was getting on there. We aren't going to be here next week. Reason? It's Easter. We normally take a statutory holiday as a podcast break. That means I'm going to run through the games in the week that will be, but also the week following. So... The Vancouver Canucks wrap up their home stand by taking on the Los Angeles Kings Monday. So you might listen to our episode and then go to the game. Hopefully you realize it's a 6 p.m. puck drop because it's on Rogers Hockey Monday Night Canada, whatever, whatever Sportsnet calls it. It's a nationally televised broadcast, but because it's nationally televised, it needs to start a little bit earlier. So it's a 6 p.m. puck drop. They then take on the Stars at home, 7 p.m. on a Thursday. And for those of you who like to get up early, you can have brunch and watch the Vancouver Canucks take on the Anaheim Ducks at 12:30 in the afternoon on a Sunday, Easter Sunday.
That's how you celebrate the Lord's day, surely.
How many days does, you know, the Christian Lord have?
Well, I guess that's, yeah, he does, but that's his extra special day, because that's the day he rose from the dead. That's all I got for Easter, is that he died on Good Friday and came back 3 days later, but...
Yes.
And okay, this definitely happened. Yeah.
So there's 3 days. There's Christmas Day, there's Good Friday, which is not really a good day.
It wasn't a great day for him, no.
And... No, and then he's just like, got it. So what's Easter Monday about?
Great question.
I mean, I get it off because
yeah,
I work for, you know, the government.
Yeah,
now.
I unfortunately do not.
And neither does my wife.
Okay, well, I'm currently in the room with someone raised Irish Catholic, so she's going to, when I get off this, I'll learn all about what Easter Monday is. Because clearly
so
my...
what you're telling me is our listeners will miss out, but you'll get the...
Yeah, well, I went to Sunday school for a little bit, but I really don't remember anything quite clearly, so...
Oh, I went to Sunday school for, I think, like, I don't know, a term, and it didn't work out for, I don't know, whatever reasons,
yeah,
but what little I do recall...
Didn't work out.
I asked questions... And I don't recall whomever, like I would say the teacher, but I don't know who the teacher was or I don't have the relevance. But what little memory I have is that they would get frustrated and would tell me to stop asking questions.
Yeah, that sounds like me.
So it's possible that they may not have accepted the answers that I was given. And that's not to suggest I was being a brat. I was just the type of kid who would like, why?
I was a white kid as well. So, for sure.
Back on the Vancouver Canucks and off of our religious off-the-rails moment. So the Canucks take on the Ducks on Easter Sunday, and then they head out on the road to – like, do they really have three road trips? Like, this is the last road trip. They just have two road games to wrap things up before the playoffs. But they do head out on the road on Tuesday, April 2nd to take on the Vegas Golden Knights, followed by a game on Wednesday the 3rd against the Coyotes. And then they're in LA to take on the Kings on a Saturday. So looking at that schedule, you got home against the Kings, Stars, and Ducks. And on the road, you've got yourself the Golden Knights, the Coyotes, and the Kings. Six games, Anna. How many points? As you shake your hands in the air.
Oh, no, I'm just counting. I say they split the game.
You're running out of fingers.
I only got 10 fingers. Split the games with the Kings.
Okay. And we're talking like 2-2, not like...
Or no, two, yeah, two and...
A loser point mixed
in. 2-0. They got to beat Arizona, come on. Vegas, okay. Vegas is the best... I think they'll beat them again. Like, they're without Aiden Hill, which is positive.
Well, not for Aiden Hill or
the Golden Knights, so sorry. But yes, for the Canucks, that is a positive. So, 2 points there. So that's six. Who do we have left? Dallas and Ducks. And 3 points out of that. So I say they drop 3 points out of... Mm-hmm. What's that six?
Now, when you say 3 points, who is it that they're giving the win to? Are they giving the win to the Ducks because it's an early game, or are they giving the win to the Stars? Ducks. Okay. I have it as a win against the Kings, an outright loss against the Stars. I have a win against the Ducks. I then have them getting the dub against the Golden Knights, a dub against the Coyotes, and I have them getting the dub against the Kings in LA on the road.
So dropping a single point.
I have them dropping two points because I have them getting an outright loss.
Okay.
Yeah. So out of a possible 12, I have the Vancouver Canucks getting 10.
And I again say 9 because, again, I'm such a negative person.
You are. You're so negative. If we think about this, one, absolutely no need to get Demko back in the net anytime soon. I mean, it would maybe be nice to give him a couple of games under his belt. So, you know, second week of April, sometime around then, maybe. But does that mean Silas gets himself a start in either the Golden Knights or the Coyotes game? That's the back-to-back.
Yeah.
Or does Casey DeSmith get the job done and continue to do so?
I mean, I would say both. I do think he, like, continues to do his work.
Oh, so you're right. Poor wording. I simply meant, does Casey get them all?
No, I think they start. Silas in Arizona. Why not? Like, that's a confidence.
At the Mullet Arena?
That's a confidence-building game if, like, it's possible to have one in the NHL with
the Mullet Arena in front of, like, you know, 8,000 fans.
Yeah. Why not? Hockey in the desert. This makes so much sense.
You know, I mean, Florida is actually doing well right now. Their crowds are reflecting that. But ask you this, Anna. Which is a bigger crowd, a sold-out Mullet Arena or a regular game night in Sunrise to watch the Panthers?
I want to say a regular game in Sunrise, but I don't know that's the truth.
But the fact that conversation exists is just very surreal. And,
yeah, like, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I do want to say, like, Florida has struggled in their dry years. I mean, Florida's dry all the time, but you know what I mean. In their lower performing years, but, like, Arizona has been on a downward trajectory for a while. Like, there's no up and down here.
If it wasn't for Gary's fascination with whatever in the state of Arizona, no team in the NHL has received as much support just blindly than the Coyotes have, like,
yeah, we're waiting on.
I mean, the Hartford Whalers, the Atlanta Thrashers, the, you know, Quebec Nordiques,
something like that. That's what they are hoping
for. Yeah, which apparently, if it doesn't go the Coyotes' way, might be the rumor is the nail in the proverbial coffin, and they're just seeing the team relocate. But even then, I don't believe it.
Move them to Salt Lake.
But that's the thing is, I think it might work in Salt Lake. I truly think you have a barn that's looking for another tenant, a dedicated ownership group. Yeah. Anyhow, we're going to take ourselves a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So the GMs got together, as they are apt to do a few times over the course of the season, and they started discussing sort of potential changes to how the rules of the game would exist. And there were a few that stood out, like players hanging their legs over the boards is going to be a big no-no. I like how it's, you'll get a warning, and then you'll get a bench minor. Now, I don't have a problem with you're going to get a warning, and then you're going to get a bench minor. Like, and the warning is, one team does it, and both benches get the warning. Why not just warn them at the start of the game?
Yeah, surely they, like, if that's the new rule, then that's the warning.
Like, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to suggest they are at all similar, but let's say a blindside hit doesn't get a warning.
Yeah.
Why does this get a warning?
Yeah, I didn't know this was an issue, but clearly an official got injured by skates. Like, sure, if you're deciding it's dangerous, it's dangerous. Like, it can happen the first time they do it, right? Anyway.
Yeah. There was discussion about 3-on-3 hockey and creating, like, illegal defense and what have you. First of all, has there ever been defense in overtime? I get that what they're trying to imply is they don't want to see the puck cycled back to maintain possession. But if you take that out of overtime, like let's say they applied like the illegal defense, you're going to get a ton of whistles. And
yeah. I think it's better that like the game keeps flowing in overtime, and the way to make that happen is allow teams to change, and then the fast-paced hockey can resume. So, yeah.
And then coaches' challenges, they're being expanded. So you have the fact that a puck over the glass can be challenged, and high sticking as well. The puck over the glass one, I honestly don't know of this being as big of an issue. I know there's been times where the discussions happen between the four officials on the ice before a call is made, but I can't think of any puck over glass penalty that was egregiously missed or called that should not have been.
I mean, wasn't Alex Barry sitting in the box when Canucks got swept by the Sharks in the dumb over Dan Hamuse, actually, that's who it was. I still am mad about that. That was a dumb miss. Well, puck over to the glass penalty.
The penalty is just a bad penalty.
I mean, I agree. Let's just get rid of that. Like, I get the frustration with like players, like getting, you know, you're trying to judge whether that player hit it or hit another player, or whether it's intentional and blah, blah, blah. Like, I get the frustration, but yeah, just get rid of it. Like, don't slow the game down more by adding a challenge.
I was thinking of this, and like, I look at it this way. Like, if a puck goes over the glass, and take out the penalty, if the puck goes over the glass, can you know, treat it like you do with 100%. Icing. Pucks, 100%. The face-offs happening in the defensive zone, there's absolutely no changes. And in fact, you could then take it a step further and create sort of a delay of game penalty that if you were to do it again without, you know, having the puck exit your zone or something along those lines, like, to me, there I have more in line with that, because, you know, it's not like the majority of them. I mean, I know why it was put in, but no way does puck over the glass happen now where it's deliberate.
Yeah.
There are much better ways to, you know, freeze the puck without drawing a penalty.
Yeah, and you can say that you shouldn't be giving, like, players that panic and just wildly clear the puck and it goes over the glass an easy out. But I think, like, it's annoying enough to, like, move the face off and not be able to change. Like, you're still under pressure at that point.
And then the high-sticking challenge, if I recall, and I'll be honest, I didn't pay too close attention to this one. It's that they can actually challenge whether or not it was their own player's stick or their stick.
Yeah, so caused it. Instead of it just being reviewable as a major, double minor, like by the officials, the coaches can review it. And I'm okay with that one. Like, there's been some pretty egregious penalty scored there.
Now, so Tockett had raised the point that he doesn't like the players who head snap where there's no contact and draw a penalty. Does the challenge allow for the penalty to be rescinded in that scenario?
I don't,
because the description I thought that was read was confirming whose stick it was.
Yeah, or whether it was a stick at all. Like, if...
Okay, so if it was a head snap with no stick, then that would be
based on that. Well, I think it's meant to be, like, if it was someone's, like, fist or a stick. I think I read that. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of like, yes, they should be calling embellishment more often, but I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah.
As part of the discussions, they talked a little bit more about CTE and its potential impact on the game, and had come to the conclusion that the science is unclear.
Yeah, I think that's such a dangerous thing to say, because it's so patently untrue. Like, the studies are there, the like impact of repeated head injuries is there. It just feels like we're back in the 80s, you know?
Well, from a legal standpoint, I'm no lawyer, and every time I've asked, you know, Sam to be my lawyer, she points to her bio on Twitter that says, "I'm not your lawyer." I don't think you could come out and simply say, it totally is an issue. We're not going to do anything about it. You can't say we're not going to do anything about it. So simply leaving it open-ended mitigates the potential immediacy of a lawsuit. That's not going to say it mitigates the lawsuit completely. So from a legal perspective, I get why they might be, you know, I use the term open-ended, not wishy-washy, because it wasn't like he was, Daly, when it was asked, was wishy-washy, came out, just said the science just isn't clear yet. He's leaving it open-ended. It's not saying it is or it isn't. It's just, I'm not sure. But you're right. Like, how many, you know, former NHL players, NFL players, like how many of these players who participated in violently contact sports have suffered issues as it relates to the head trauma that they experienced, and it's diagnosed postmortem, because it is currently the only way to be diagnosed is after you've passed suffering from CTE. To say the science is not clear, you're simply saying, yeah, they're died. They died. It's tragic that their brain had issues. Couldn't have been from us. We're like, is it just developing on its own and randomly the percentage is just higher when you happen to play football or hockey? Like,
I just think it's, it's such a dangerous comment to make just from a point of view of, like, anytime someone in power said something like that, it kind of validates the people below that are saying, like, bring toughness back into hockey, like, you know, it's getting too soft, and, like, also it validates player safety, not punishing headshots. I mean, are they getting better? Sure, slightly, but, like, it's still a bit random will of justice sometimes.
Why are players wearing helmets?
Yeah.
Right? Like, for me, and I'm sort of going beyond hockey, there are sometimes, you know, statements and comments as it pertains to safety as being too safe. And I always find that interesting, because the opposite of being too safe is not safe. And I would much rather be too safe than not safe.
Yeah.
And especially when it comes to, you know, your personal well-being.
Totally. And I think it's just, like, hockey's so fast and skilled these days. That's what's fun to watch. It's not fun to see players beat the living daylights out of each other. And it's really not fun to see players taking headshots. And it's not fun to see, like, players, you know, being taken out of the game.
Yeah. I've whether it's pessimistic me or not, I've come to realize that the game is not going to change at the pace or the speed as to what I would like. And I genuinely wonder if it'll change at all during my lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say just by looking at the world around us. It's hard to remain optimistic that things are changing for the better. Yeah. When it comes to sort of toxic masculinity and that kind of thing.
And you know, someone could fairly point to say, Chris, you were around when the NHL introduced helmets and everyone wears one now. Well, yeah, they made this decision. They grandfathered players in, and I, you know, slowly remember the transition of helmets becoming more prevalent. Visors, every player wears a visor or a face shield now, and that wasn't always the case. Like, a lot of these enhancements have occurred during my lifetime. So maybe it is wrong of me to suggest that, you know, player safety enhancements won't occur. I feel, though, there are some which, in my opinion, are so easy to deal with now. And it's not an easy job, but you can do something.
Yeah, I agree. Like, we don't have all the answers. I'm not exactly sure how you make hockey safer for everyone. It's a dangerous sport. Like, there's definitely steps I know can work, and that's applying.
You just err on the side of player safety, right? Like, it's just like when we've talked about suspensions and such, err on the side of player safety. It's hard to argue against safety. Yeah. I mean, I know many people do. And if you are curious as to people arguing over safety and what it's like, you can find it on YouTube. There's a video of CBC interviewing people in Alberta, the province of Alberta, back in the 80s when Alberta made seatbelts mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
And number of people who are just going off on mandatory seatbelts and how it's overkill.
Oh, wow.
Like it, and I'm not trying to single out the province of Alberta. It just happened to be that video exists, but it's very applicable in the sense of how, you know, the science that supported the use of mandatory seatbelts made people safe, save lives. Anyhow, torts. Apparently, he said something. The referee, none too happy with it, gave him a bench minor for unsportsmanlike conduct and ejected him from the game. Torts, because he's Torts, told the referee, "I'm not leaving." And if you happen to miss this, it's an interesting, 90 seconds, maybe 2 minutes of back and forth between Torts trying to prove his point and not leave the bench and the official saying, "Well, we're not starting the game until you do," which Torts has to know he's losing this argument, discussion, what have you. But proceeds to get himself suspension. He got fined. The ownership group had said that they would pay for the fine, though I don't know how that works either in the NHL, but it's not players, so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not allowed, but at least publicly. Yeah, and then since he's come back, he has scratched the team captain. So it's just been a interesting couple of weeks in the life of John Tortorella.
He's probably overtired. They've probably not installed a Murphy bed in the rink.
Yeah, I did want to talk about it just because I think it feeds into the culture thing too. Like, Torts is still that old school coach, and it seems to work with players, but he's becoming increasingly not a fit with the media, with the fans, with the officials. If you scratch your team captain, you've got to be able to answer questions about that.
Not talking about that.
The fact that he...
Not here to talk about that.
I love, I really can't remember who said it. I think it was maybe a tweet, and yeah, apologies, I can't remember. But it was about, Torts is so high on accountability and players taking responsibility, but, God forbid the media ask him to take any accountability for things he has done. At the end of the day, we're in that...
Bonus points if it's Larry Brooks.
Who was his enemy in Vancouver? Did he have a particular one?
I don't know.
I feel like he got annoyed at Kuzma a couple of times, but I think that was just Kuzma being around all the time.
I mean, was Gallagher still on the beat when...
Mm.
Tony seems to be the guy who could drive a coach nuts.
Yeah.
But anyhow...
Yeah, I just think that I get it that you're employed as a coach to get results, and good for you if that works. But when it doesn't, and you've been uncooperative with the media and with officials and with the league and everything, that's where it starts to break down for me. He's not a doctor being forced to answer questions about his patient care. He's a hockey coach. He has to answer to the fans and to media. Sorry, that's part of it.
But the fans love him.
For a time.
And I think, sure, but in Philadelphia, there's a thing about the Philadelphia fan that I think Torts
gels with, sort of fits. Yeah, I just feel when it stops working, the come down will be, quite large.
Well, again, he'll get another job because he's got 1,001 lives.
carousel of coaches.
Yeah, well, in fairness, there are some coaches who have fallen off that carousel, rightfully so. Yes, there are a few of them that have tried to get back on, but thankfully, people speak up. Yeah,
and culture of accountability, and we're not putting Torts in the same bracket as some of those coaches that...
He's in his own bracket.
Yeah, which he's happy about. He doesn't like sharing brackets with anybody.
No, and he's not going to talk about it. Oh, so here we are, end of a week, end of an episode. We're not here next week again. As a reminder, Easter long weekend, we're going to take that weekend off. And I think it's important that we do so because we got to get ourselves ready for some playoff hockey, which will kick off in April. Can't believe I'm saying that.
Yeah.
Like
the
Canucks haven't clinched, but I mean, they could have a catastrophic collapse at this point in the season. And yet I don't think they can, like, only math would prevent them from making the playoffs, and the math is still in their favor. So
yeah, it's coming.
My goodness, Anna, what are we going to do for the playoffs? I hope it's a decently lengthy run.
Of course.
I mean, obviously I want them to win the Stanley Cup, but I don't want us to record an episode and then come back the next week and say it's over because they got swept. Oh, I couldn't handle the Canucks getting swept. They better not get swept.
They're not going to. It's not a guarantee. So.
No. How is your guarantee game?
I don't make my guarantees very often, so I'll stick with that one and just say they're not going to get swept, because if they win a single playoff game, I'm right.
That's true. That's true. But Anna, you are up in Zero Mile House with your mom. You were there for a wedding. I imagine the two of you will be making your way back home. But do you have, or does Anna's mom have any final words of wisdom for the listeners this week?
Always bring spare shoes to a wedding. You're going to want to dance till 1 a.m.
Oh, really?
Can't
say I've ever been so inspired, but...
Well.
I mean, I get the shoes part. Like, I find that the dress shoes that I wear are as uncomfortable as all could be. And as, you know, someone who just went this weekend to get his wheels buffed and shined, throw on some comfy shoes if you're going to...
Yeah.
Dance makes sense.
Yeah, I was too confident. My heels are very comfortable for heels, but they're still heels, so yeah.
Like, how big were the heels?
Not that big, like a couple of inches, and they're block heels, so they're pretty comfy as far as heels go, but yeah, after several hours of dancing, they were sore.
Yeah. I mean, I don't wear heels.
But.
Can't say I'm so inclined to do so.
But the dress shoes, again, you also need a spare set if you're going to be dancing long into the night.
Final words of wisdom from me: wear sunscreen. Don't make the mistake Chris did this weekend, and what sounds like Anna and Anna's mom made themselves.
I mean, I wore sunscreen. It was just like weirdly.
Just not enough?
Yeah. I think I have a very large forehead, as anybody who's met me can attest, the 4-size 5 head. And yeah, not enough.
Well, I was going to say that I think you and I have very similar, you know, skin.
Yeah, very pale.
Sort of, yeah, like where the transitions are pale to red. So I started making that transition. And I mean, I should know my lesson. I wore a hat. I'm wearing hats more frequently now. I don't have the hair. They keep my head somewhat protected, but yeah, I should have worn some sunscreen. So you, our listener, heed my advice. Although the weather forecast in Environment Canada says rain all week long.
Still wear sunscreen.
Yeah. So here we are, end of the week, end of the episode. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time. If you want to take part in the conversation and keep in touch with us, you can do so by following us on all the social medias. We're at the EC4 Podcast on most, except for Threads. We're at the Real Estate 4 Podcast. But the best place to keep in touch with us is through Discord at discord.io/C4Podcast and join in the conversation there. If you want to support the show, one of the easiest ways, it's completely free to do so, is to tell your friends about us and have them subscribe. Or better yet, engage. But if you have a few bucks that you're like, hey, you know what? I think Anna or Chris deserve a little treat or something like that. You can go to support.c4podcast.com, which will forward you off to buy me a coffee, or as Anna and I like to call
buy
it.
Buy me a pint.
And you can go and throw a one-off donation our way to buy us a pint or two, or alternatively commit to supporting the show either on a monthly basis or annual basis. Monthly is $5 a month, and annual, I think, is, if my memory serves me correct, $50. And that just ensures that we can pay the bills. Not that the bills are significant, but as we mention each and every week, they do exist. And it came up just in passing conversation. Someone had listened to an episode and they're like, oh, you must make good money. You've got ads at the start of your show. We make nothing from those ads. They don't give us a penny. I would love that there not to be ads anymore. I think in retrospect, the worst decision that the podcast made, and we've made some pretty bad ones, was probably joining that network.
They won't return our emails.
I mean, we sort of pulling the curtain back here, and we're not talking about overtime. Overtime, when they presented the offer to us, it seemed reasonable. They had some big plans. Pandemic hit. They decided that, you know, we were too small potatoes for them. And had told us we needed to transition out in, like, I think they gave me a 30-day warning. And so I started looking at what we could do. And the backup plan was always to transition to the host that I use for my esports podcast. But because, again, numbers are so effusive, they didn't add up in my mind to what I could support. So I hadn't made a decision right away. And then they're getting antsy because they want us to go. And so they told us, like, hey, here's this other network, was it Full Press Sports or whatever? Mm-hmm. And they seemed reasonable, and they're like, yeah, sure. And then they tell us, oh, you need to have all of these ad spots. Why? You're not paying us anything. Like, anyhow, they have their own Canucks podcast, eh?
Do they?
Yeah, it's like 15-minute episodes.
Okay, well, we're better.
So you actually listen to, like, 10 minutes of ads to get a 15-minute episode.
Yeah. So the moral of the story is skip the ads.
Yeah. But again, I hope they either return an email or reach out or say, hey, how come you keep pulling the ad inserts? Because they do insert. They try to insert ads into our episodes, like in the middle of it, and I keep removing them. And they try to add them at the end, and I keep removing them. So I'm hoping at some point they'll get so pissed off and irritated by me doing this, they will reach out to me, and I'll say, I'd like to leave now, thank you. Long-winded story, but it has been told.
That's a bad.
And I'll probably tell it again. Yeah. So, Anna, it's been a slice. If anyone wants to follow you on the socials, you're A4Size03, and for me, I am at LightForce. But on behalf of the two of us, you've been listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, and we're out.